Welcome to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, coming to you this week from our well-padded studios deep beneath the earth on Reddington Road in Concord, New Hampshire. I'm joined by Chris Ryan, and we are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And we are powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save our planet for our kids. For a free consultation, go to revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? Well, this week in sports, the Donald moves to the middle. He kind of takes second base because you will recall that not too long ago, Donald met up with Chuck Schumer, his New York buddy, and Nancy Pelosi, and they forged a deal that surprised everybody. And this week, following up on that extraordinary development, the Don did it again. Apparently over takeout Chinese food and chocolate pie, real health food, Don and Chuck and Nancy went at it at the White House and decided that, well, maybe those dreamers ought to be protected. And if everybody could just talk about strong border security, Don could defer the wall. The uproar, the sounds and screams of pain from the far right over Donald's consorting with Democrats has been nothing short of music to my particular ears. But it's a startling particular political development. But it's not as if the Don has any politics. Let's remember, he's a guy who supported Democrats. He voted with Democrats. He's from New York. He's a deal maker. Don is an opportunist. He's an opportunist, and he'll take deals where he finds them. And really, I think maybe he's finally come around to saying, I want deals with whoever can give me deals. And Chuck Schumer, he's a deal maker. Chuck and Don, they're both New Yorkers. That bromance has finally hit. Maybe it's the Chinese food. And I even know the Chinese restaurant that they ordered the Chinese food from.
Any good?
Well, it's okay. Yeah. But they put magic stuff in it because it's the same Chinese restaurant where we used to meet with members of the opposite party. We'd all get together for a bipartisan caucus over Chinese food and talk about baseball and sports and our kids and other stuff and how bad the Chinese food was. So that was, you know. But it's really hard to tell what is going on with the Don.
Well, I think that, you know, as we know, Don can change from moment to moment. It may have changed during the course of this conversation. But, you know, if you look at this from a political standpoint, you know, we will remember what Donald Trump said during the course of the campaign, that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and still retain his base. This is the political equivalent of doing that. And Donald Trump has gotten as far as he's going to get by just catering to his base. So if you look at his strategy from Friday in regards to Twitter, it would appear to me that Donald Trump is going to use the same type of language, the same type of rhetoric in order to keep those folks happy. And he is going to work to make Washington, D.C. work from a centrist standpoint, independent standpoint, in order to provide enough for folks in the middle to say, you know what, I may not like Donald Trump. I may not see him as being fit for as president, but he is actually getting Washington to work together, and our lives may be better now than they were before. We may be safer now than they were before, and as a result of that, he will see his approval numbers go up to some extent, and will have a chance at re-election. So this is a strategy that is not without fault, and I'm not sure it's a strategy in its entirety, but it is one that I think, you know, is really the only path forward for him to being successful. If he is, the biggest problem that he has now is individuals don't view him as being competent. And that is extremely problematic. If he is able to be the guy on The Apprentice and be the reality TV president who gets people to come together and gets Washington to work for the first time in a long time, then that may be enough for him to see his approval numbers go up some.
Well, it might be. I mean, he's been down to Florida for to visit hurricane victims. He managed to get through that visit without putting too large a foot in his mouth. He managed to get through the 9/11 ceremonies, only making, you know, a few gaffes, including calling 9/11 7/11.
He did.
He was missing Cumberland Farms. So it was, but that's, you know, that's the kind of split up. That's the kind of mistake any 70-year-old who's on his way to dementia could make. I mean, that's just a simple split of the tongue. On this trip to Florida, there was no press about Melania's shoes. I don't even know what shoes she was wearing. Well, when they went down this time, so
his second trip to Houston was probably the best day of his presidency.
Yeah.
He was good. Like there was the pictures of him with kids, and he seemed, you know, at ease. There was a humanity to him that you never really see and assume to some extent doesn't exist. But he was really good that day. There is no question that the last two and a half weeks have been the best weeks of his presidency, and there has been a consistency to kind of turning this thing around. Now, whether it continues or not, I have no idea.
Well, remember, we now have John Kelly, the Marine general, who's chief of staff. A number of antagonistic staffers at the top have left. Bannon is gone. Gorka is gone. We haven't heard much from Steve Miller, the last of a troika of really unnerving characters.
And let's face it. I mean, they may have been establishment figures, but Priebus and Spicer were anything but competent. I think that's a part of it as well.
Priebus and Spicer certainly couldn't handle Donald Trump.
Right.
I mean, and clearly he is not somebody who's going to be handled. He's going to do his own thing for better or for worse.
But Sanders has done a good job of stabilizing, you know, the briefing room. Like they wouldn't even put Spicer in the briefing room on TV because they were afraid of what he was going to do. So Sanders has done a nice job of stabilizing things there. And Kelly has done a really good job of getting the staff as much in line as he can. And I think that these things are pretty evident, and we see it on a day in day out basis.
You know, it's interesting. I'm sometimes on Facebook, the famous octogenarian geriatric social media, only used by old people. You know, the younger set, the smart set, are on Snapchat and Snapchat and Instagram and Twitter and everything else.
Bill Belichick says Snapface.
I do all that Snapface, whatever it is. But anyway, there was a recent, you know, who knows what Facebook is feeding me, the Big Brother feed for the liberal lefty. But one of the feeds that came across was some article from some probably discredited but probably not Russian fake news that talked about Donald Trump finally realizing everybody hates him. And it may be that the low poll numbers, which is really, you know, the thing that seems to drive him both to distraction and delight, is poll numbers. That's what he really cares about. It may be that the poll numbers finally sunk in and that Kelly has finally sunk in and said, you got to turn this thing around because your poll numbers are sinking. The Republicans can't get anything done. You want to get anything done, you better make some deals where you can find them. And perhaps his pragmatic side is coming out, and he'll make deals with Democrats if that's what suits him. Now, One of his big promises on the campaign trail was that he was going to do an infrastructure program. He's going to need the Democrats to do that. And we may be gearing up for some trade-offs here. He may end up saying, okay, look, I want tax reform, and it's going to contain some elements that are going to make your people unhappy, but I'm going to give you infrastructure. So there may be some deals to be had before the special counsel lowers the boom for collusion with Russia. This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM. We've been talking with Chris Ryan about politics this week. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches and call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. Don't go away, folks. We'll be back with a really interesting guest. We've got Bill Christie of the law firm of Shaheen Gordon, who represented the New Hampshire Democratic Party in recent proceedings to challenge the voter suppression bill, SB3. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, and coming to you from our elegant studios deep beneath the earth on Reddington Road here in Concord, New Hampshire. Off the Record is brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with dementia, Alzheimer's, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour, celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111, and we are powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, that's a free consultation, call revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? Well, we have a very special guest here on Off the Record today. We are joined by attorney Bill Christie of the firm of Shaheen and Gordon, a regional New England law firm. I know Bill well. He and I have been colleagues for a long time, and Bill is one of the lead counsel on the lawsuit now pending in Hillsborough County Superior Court in New Hampshire concerning the legality of SB3, the voting rights suppression bill. So, Bill, welcome to Off the Record.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us a little bit first about SB3. What is SB3, and how did it come to pass?
Sure. It's a lot of confusion about what the bill actually does. And what it does is in past legislative sessions, the Republicans have tried to change the definition of who can vote, whether you're domiciled in the state or you're a resident of the state. And SB3 comes at that from sort of a side angle. What it does is it makes the voter registration process in the state much more difficult. New Hampshire is one of the few states in the country where almost everyone has to register to vote in person. And when you register to vote in person, you have to establish that you're domiciled in New Hampshire. That means that basically you live here and you have a present intention to keep living here. And under the old law, you would walk in and they would say, what's your name? And I'd say, Bill Christie. And they go, would you like to register to vote? And I would say, yes. And I would fill out a form. And they might ask me for an ID to prove who I was. That ID may or may not have the correct address on there. And then I could fill out a domicile affidavit certifying that I live in Concord, New Hampshire.
And when you say an affidavit, you mean something that's sworn to under oath in which you say, I swear to tell the truth under the pain and penalty of perjury. I mean, it's essentially a legal document that is binding on the person who's signing it.
That's absolutely right. And if you give a false statement in your domicile affidavit, if you don't really live in Concord, You're one of these mythical people driving up from Massachusetts to vote on Election Day. That is a crime, and that could be prosecuted as a crime under the old law. And in the very, 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 very rare circumstances when that actually happened, it was prosecuted as a crime.
So there have been cases where under the old law, people filed false domicile affidavits and action was taken against them.
Absolutely. The state takes it very seriously.
Uh-huh.
What the new law does is, in my example, when I show up to register to vote, if I do it 31 days prior to the election and I don't have a piece of paper that proves where I live, they send me away and I can't register to vote. I can't sign a domicile affidavit and they say, tough luck, you have to come back later. So if you don't know about the law and you don't have a utility bill, you don't have the deed to your house, or if your driver's license, for whatever reason, doesn't have your current address on it, and mine doesn't, then you can't register to vote. They make you come back. They've also seriously complicated the process on Election Day. If you show up on Election Day to register to vote and you don't have a form with you, then there's these lengthy forms you have to read and fill out and certify either that you will come back or you will send in the documentation within 10 days, or you certify that you don't have the documentation and agree to allow the state to investigate you and come to your house to prove after the election that you actually live there. And if you fill out those forms incorrectly, at least under the law as it was written, you are subject to criminal penalties and a civil fine up to $5,000. It was those penalties that the judge in his order on Tuesday morning found were a severe burden on the right to vote and issued a temporary order telling the state that they cannot enforce them.
Okay, so let's go back a little bit. I just want to
sure.
I want to look at some of the background for this. So during the campaign for governor, the last campaign for governor, our governor, Chris Sununu, famously said that he thought something about there were thousands of people being bussed up illegally from Massachusetts to vote. I mean, that was something he said on the campaign. He later disavowed that and said, gee, I don't really think there are people being bussed up from Massachusetts to vote. And our president, the current occupant of the White House, Donald Trump, got on a tear saying that Hillary Clinton didn't really win the popular vote by 3 million votes, that was all a result of voter fraud and illegal voters, and he wanted to crack down on it, and it was a big, big problem. And so he formed this commission, a voter fraud commission, and he put in charge of it a guy named Kolbach, who is the Secretary of State of Kansas, who is a noted alt-right, right-wing nut job who writes for Breitbart, the far-right radical rag on the internet. And surprisingly, our Secretary of State, Bill Gardner, joined that commission. Now, just from a political standpoint, that's kind of interesting. Bill Gardner is a Democrat. His job is a really nonpartisan job as Secretary of State, helping to oversee elections, among other things. And he's been the subject of an awful lot of discussion in the press about his role on the commission. Does our Secretary of State believe that there is massive voter fraud in New Hampshire?
Well, Secretary Gardner, when pushed, will always take the position that there is no evidence of voter fraud in this state. His office has disavowed the busloads or carloads of individuals coming from Massachusetts. And parenthetically, I've been involved in every election in this state since 2000, and that has never happened. And there are Republican poll observers at every election, very responsible people, and they have never alleged in any election that that has actually happened. But that's an aside. What is unfortunate in recent years with Secretary Gardner is when the Republicans have had control of the legislature, he has backed and has supported restrictions on the right to vote, especially restrictions on same-day registration, which we have in this state, and making it harder for people to engage in same-day registration. In the last election, about 11% of the voters in November 2016 registered to vote on Election Day. That doesn't mean they came from out of state. It means that they may have moved in between the time of the last election. They may be college students. They may be like a resident at at Dartmouth or something like that.
Or they may be new voters who were inspired by the campaign to vote.
Absolutely. And Secretary Gardner and the Secretary of State's office has routinely endorsed laws like SB 3 that make it more difficult for people to register to vote on Election Day.
Why would the Secretary of State want to do that when there really is no evidence of any problematic voter fraud in the state? I just don't get it.
Yeah, you could speculate on motives. You may wonder. He is appointed or voted in by the legislature, and the legislature is dominated by Republicans who want these types of laws passed. So you could say there's a political element of it. I think there's been some statements from his office, some concerns about, you know, college students voting, whether they really should be voting here in this state. And more recently, what the justification has been, not that there's voter fraud in the state, but there's a perception of voter fraud, and that needs to be addressed. Now, that's not a real justification of the law, and it's can't sit there and say, well, there's no voter fraud, and we're going to create a perception of voter fraud through statements from Chris Sununu or statements from the president, and then say we need to deal with this perception that we've created. But that seems to be where they are right now.
It's an interesting thing, you know. And voting rights and the right to vote is really the fundamental right of citizens in our democracy. It is the basic right that people have fought and died for. And in many states around the country where voter suppression is an issue, the voter suppression attempts seem to be, and I'm not saying this is universal, but by and large, seem to be racially based, where you've got attempts, you know, it's been a traditional problem for African Americans to vote. We know the history of racism in this country, and voter suppression has been a very, very hot issue for a long time in southern states and other states with large African American populations. We don't have a large African American population in New Hampshire. It's quite homogeneous, but we are the first in the nation primary state. I'm trying to figure out why this is political in New Hampshire. Is it that Republican legislators believe that everybody who wants to register from college towns is going to vote for Democrats? Is there some perception that we've got to crack down on college students?
Well, there's a cross current of a couple of things there in New Hampshire. First of all, New Hampshire is one of the few states in the country that does not have what's called motor voter. And what motor voter is when someone gets their driver's license or gets some other core government service, they have the opportunity at that time to register to vote. New Hampshire exempted itself from that in the early 90s or in the mid-90s and replaced that with same-day registration. So what same-day registration is if you wake up the morning of Election Day, you can register to vote. You just go to the polling place, you say, I live here, and you're able to vote. The towns that have the highest rate of same-day registration are towns that vote Democratic. It is Durham, Hanover, Plymouth, Somersworth, Manchester, and Nashua. So by the hostility towards the concept that these out-of-state so-called college students are tipping elections is related to the same-day registration process, because in those towns where you have a lot of new voters, or you have a lot of people who have moved, or you have poorer voters, those tend to be the communities with a higher rate of same-day registration. And since there's been same-day registration in this state, the Democrats have done better and better and better. And I think on the presidential election, there's only been one election since we've had same-day registration in this state where the state has voted Republican.
So if I'm a Republican looking at the way we vote in New Hampshire, I'm not all that happy about same-day registration, because they all seem to be them liberal progressive voters who are going to vote Democratic, and I want to do something to stop it.
That's right. And going back to SB3 for a moment, the form, you know, the type of documentation that they ask for in the, to prove that you're domiciled here, their documentation that, I would say upper class or even rich people or older people would tend to have. But it's not necessarily documentation that younger people or, low-income people would tend to have. So it makes it harder for those groups to present the documentation. And what it also is designed to do is to create capacity problems on election day. If you can make the lines longer on election day, and you can make the lines longer in areas where there's a big turnout, such as Hanover or Manchester, there's a ton of data out there that the longer the line, at some point, people start to give up and they pull up. There's no parking at the high school to vote, or they only have an hour for their lunch break and they're not going to wait in line and get in trouble and go back to work. So it creates capacity problems in those Democratic districts in an effort to suppress the turnout of the Democratic vote.
We're talking with Bill Christie, an attorney for the plaintiffs in the suit challenging SB3. Bill's an attorney at Shaheen and Gordon here in Concord and around the state and region. We're going to take a break. This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, go to revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet and archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, coming to you from our studios deep beneath the earth on Reddington Road, where luckily today it's air conditioned. We're talking with Bill Christie, an attorney at Shaheen and Gordon, who's representing some of the plaintiffs in the suit against SB3, the voter suppression bill, where there's been some recent action. We are brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. And we're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, go to revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. So, Bill, before the break, we were talking about some of the ways in which SB3 puts roadblocks in front of those who want to vote. It seems designed to create long lines. It seems to design to make people only be able to register at certain times. It seems designed to intimidate voters with new kinds of criminal penalties. What kinds of penalties for violating its provisions did SB3 put in?
That's an interesting question, because it's not entirely clear. at some levels, and on other levels it is very clear. But basically, what it did was it made it a misdemeanor if you certified on a form that you filled out that you had paperwork proving where you were domiciled, in other words, where your address was, and you failed to send in that paperwork within 10 days. It made it a crime to...
By the way, a misdemeanor is punishable under New Hampshire law by a year in jail.
Correct. And it also had a civil provision where you could be subject to a fine of up to $5,000 for the same act. And so there was some discretion there, apparently, in the law from the state on how to handle certain events. So what it would do is it would make someone sitting there on election day in a line, and probably many people listening to the show have voted. They know, you know, you have to stand in a line. But you have to fill out this lengthy form. You have to understand the form. Our expert in the case says that the form is written at a level where you need a graduate degree to understand it.
It's not something President Trump would understand, clearly, because he's generally talking with a fourth-grade vocabulary. We can leave that one aside.
I think you're probably right about that, yeah. But we'll leave that aside. And if you fill out the form incorrectly or you check the wrong box, you can be subject to these onerous penalties. So it's not just that what the impact of the law would be if you make that mistake, but it is the intimidation factor. That it's designed to make it complicated as possible, with the specter that if you'd make a mistake on this form, you could be subject to penalties. As I said in the court the other day, that nobody should have to fill out a form to register to vote and think to themselves, do I need to consult with a lawyer before I sign this form? But that's exactly what the SB3 does, and it's another example of what the law does to try to intimidate and stop people from voting.
That seems to run counter to everything that we know, at least in the recent history in New Hampshire, in terms of voting. I mean, generally, this has been thought of as a state where you can switch your party affiliation at a primary. You can declare one, you know, a party affiliation right there. The same day registration has been an important feature of voting in New Hampshire. And so, you know, I mean, I'm thinking of somebody who's recently moved to the state. They go to try to register. They're 35 days out. They've just moved to the state. They're trying to be good citizens, right? They're being good citizens. I've moved to the state. I've signed a lease. I'm moving in. I don't have the papers. I want to register. And the town clerk under SB3 says, no, go away. You can't register to vote. So they say, okay, well, I'll wait till the election day. And election day rolls around, and they get to the head of the line. And under SB3, they're presented with a complicated form that they've got to read, understand, digest, figure out what boxes to check. And then they got to promise, right, if I'm not mistaken, they got to promise that within 10 days they're going to send paperwork back to the town or bring it in that proves I really do live here.
That's right.
And if they fail to fill out the form correctly, or if for some reason their paperwork gets lost in the mail, or they just forget it because the press of business carries them on, and they're going about their business as a normal citizen in New Hampshire, working at their work and going home at night, they could get a knock on the door from police.
That's right.
The police would then say, we're here to investigate, and you're under arrest.
That's right. Even in a circumstance where the person is lawfully domiciled, where they register to vote and has a constitutional right to vote under the New Hampshire Constitution, because you made a paperwork mistake when registering to vote, you could be prosecuted for a crime under the law as it was written.
So a lawsuit was filed challenging SB3, and you represent one or some of the plaintiffs, the complaining parties in this case.
Correct.
Who do you represent?
I represent the New Hampshire Democratic Party.
And who are the are there other plaintiffs?
Yes.
In the case,
there's another group, another set of lawyers representing the League of Women Voters, and several individual plaintiffs.
And you went to court. You asked for an injunction preventing this law from going into effect.
Yes.
And there were hearings held.
Yes.
What did the state of New Hampshire, represented, I presume, by the Attorney General's office,
because yep.
I used to be an assistant attorney general, and that's the kind of thing I did when a law was challenged. If you go to court and, you know, they tell you in the morning, here's the brief, go off and defend this thing. So somebody from the Attorney General's office represented the state. What did the state argue? What was their argument in support of SB3, which, at least as we discuss it here, and granted we're a little subjective about it, but as we discuss
it. I think we got it right.
As we discuss it here, it sounds like as clear a case of voter suppression as I've ever heard. What did the state argue?
Well, the state, its lead argument was a technical argument. It argued that the New Hampshire Democratic Party and the other plaintiffs did not have standing to bring the case. Now, for those people who haven't gone to law school, standing is a legal requirement. It means you have to have suffered an actual harm to bring the case. You can't bring a theoretical lawsuit. And they, despite the fact that there are a ton of cases out there, including a United States Supreme Court case that says the New Hampshire Democratic Party has standing to bring election law claims on behalf of their candidates, supporters, and voters, the Secretary of State's office claimed that we didn't have standing to bring the claim. They lost on that issue. It was a very the judge was very emphatic in his opinion on that issue. On the other substantive areas of the law, they had a more subtle argument in which they argue that the changes to the law are actually quite small. They're incremental. That we're being overdramatic, basically, on the impact that the law has. We're being speculative. Don't worry, Judge. It's all going to work out if you just let the law go into effect. And they claimed that well, there's always been criminal penalties for voter fraud, and the penalties that are being added on in the case here really aren't that much different than penalties that previously existed.
And while I certainly wasn't in court, I presume from our discussion that the plaintiffs emphatically countered by pointing out the ways in which this measurably and demonstrably changes both the nature and severity of the penalties for paperwork errors.
Yeah, exactly. We put on argument regarding the impact of the law, and I've talked about much of it here, or at least some of it here on today's show, the long lines, the paperwork confusion, the threat of prosecution, the fact that the law is targeted and will cause capacity problems, and that the biggest same-day registration polling places around the state, all of which happen to vote Democratic. We also put on evidence from the legislative history. You had members of the Republican members of the New Hampshire legislature stating, I don't believe college kids should be voting in this state. That is why they supported the law. And, you know, as I said in the hearing, you got to respect them for their honesty, but the reason what their motivation there is per se unconstitutional.
It's an impermissible reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, the fact is, college kids do get to vote in New Hampshire. They can't vote twice. They can't vote both in New Hampshire and their home state, but they can vote in New Hampshire.
And there's a, not to interrupt you, but there's a big myth there. You know, a lot of people say, well, why can't they vote in their home state where they come from? And, you know, every state's voting law is different. For a lot of these students, they can't vote in their home state. Because, you know, if you think about it, someone that's going to UNH or Dartmouth or even a two-year school here in New Hampshire. They're spending most of their time here in New Hampshire.
They're domiciled
here in New Hampshire. They go to school here. They work here. They pay bills here. And a lot of these people can't vote in their home state. So there's sort of a myth out there that they can pick or choose where they want to vote, and that's simply not true.
Yeah. So in the end, what did the judge do?
So in the end, what the judge said was that he issued what's called a temporary restraining order, barring the state from enforcing the criminal and civil penalties under the law. So in other words, if there's an election next week and someone goes in to vote and they register to vote and they fill out the form incorrectly, there's nothing the state can do about it. That the threat of prosecution is gone.
So the law was allowed for the moment to stand, but without either its civil or criminal penalties.
And yep.
In fact, this order came out the morning of a special election up in Laconia for a seat in the House of Representatives in Concord, if I'm not mistaken, and the Democrat won.
Correct.
And we don't know at this point how many or how much impact SB 3 had on that vote.
That community, Belmont, and I think it was four wards in Laconia, traditionally they have a very low same-day registration statistically. So I doubt it had much of an impact there. It will have impact in future elections, though. And the judge in his order stated he was very concerned about the constitutionality, about other provisions of the law. But because of he had not had time to hear enough evidence, considering we're very close to several upcoming elections, he deferred issuing an order on the rest of the law. And we're going to have a hearing on that in the near future.
We have been talking with Bill Christie, a experienced trial lawyer at Shaheen and Gordon, a regional law firm with offices here in Concord and Dover, among others. Bill represented the New Hampshire Democratic Party in the challenge to SB 3, the voter suppression bill passed recently by the Republican legislature. The judge has issued a temporary order prohibiting the state from enforcing civil or criminal penalties for any violations of that law. There are going to be further proceedings, and we'll be really interested to see what happens as things go along. Bill, thanks for joining us on Off the Record, and thanks for all your good work.
Thank you for having me.
It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL-AM and FM, streaming live over the internet and archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, brought to you by The Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community for seniors, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at The Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? We're going to take a short break here on Off the Record. We'll be back to wrap up in just a few. Don't go away. Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet. All our shows are archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com, so you can binge listen anytime you wish. We're brought to you by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been using sunshine to power up businesses and homes who want to save money and save the planet for our kids. For a free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. What can sunshine do for you? And we're also brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire. First assisted living community for seniors, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. Well, it's been another wild week. President Donald Trump has been making deals with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi, his new best friends, over chow mein fun and lo mein and chocolate pie at the White House. Galloping Chuck Schumer, the New York guy, and the New York Don seem to strike a bromance to make a deal on DACA. That also included some words about stronger border security. We'll see if Don sticks to the deal. Meanwhile, North Korea keeps lobbing missiles overhead at Japan, and the Caribbean is devastated. Don visited Irma and gave comfort to Floridian victims. This is going to be a long cleanup, and I guess that's what I would say about the Trump presidency. We talked with Bill Christie about the voter suppression bill SB3. Now, criminal and civil penalties on hold until further evidence is taken. This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet. Thanks to our sponsors, the Birches at Concord and Revision Energy. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another exciting program. Thanks for joining us.